Mr. Stiller.
May it please the court, I make my first appearance in this circuit on behalf of Teresa Aldridge, who asked this court to conduct de novo review of the following question. Did any part of her offense of knowingly possessing and passing counterfeit United States currency occur outside the United States when, as the district court found, she did not knowingly come into possession and therefore did not knowingly pass United States currency until after it arrived to her residence in the Western District of Wisconsin? The answer to that question, Your Honors, is an unequivocal no.
The answer to the question as you've posed it is an obvious no. But the correct question is whether the offense or any of its relevant conduct includes international links. So the issue that I'd like you to analyze, which your brief doesn't really go into, is how the relevant conduct features of the guidelines work. What's in the relevant conduct of this offense?
Your Honor, relevant conduct is more narrow than conduct that might be relevant to the overall sentencing process.
We're well aware of this, counsel. There's a definition of relevant conduct. It's in the guidelines. I would like you to apply it.
I will, Your Honor. It's Section 1B1.3. A defendant is responsible for all acts and omissions that she committed, aided, abetted, counseled, commanded, induced, procured, or willfully caused by her. Here, she, I guess in a broad sense, induced, procured, and caused the Nigerian to direct a parcel into the United States. But as the district court correctly found, what Ms. Aldridge believed she was inducing, procuring, and causing was the mailing of legitimate bona fide currency, not counterfeit currency. Going on to 1B1.3A1B, in the course of a jointly undertaken criminal activity, the defendant is responsible for all reasonably foreseeable acts and omissions of others in furtherance of the defendant's offense. I say that that is inapplicable for two reasons. First and foremost, the defendant's offense in this case, the offense of conviction, was the possession and passing of counterfeit currency. She did not have concerted activity with the Nigerian on that topic. We admit that she was in cahoots with the Nigerian with respect to the unrelated bogus check scheme that begat the reimbursement.
So if I understand correctly, On your argument, everything depends on the fact that she was not charged with any of the bogus checks. If she'd been charged with the bogus checks, then there's an international element in the offense of conviction. But since she wasn't charged with the check forgery, the offense of conviction limitation in this hanging paragraph in 1.3A1 means that the international aspect is not relevant conduct. Is that your argument?
If I'm understanding Your Honor's question correctly, and it's one that I have not thought about, I don't believe that the counterfeiting would be relevant conduct to the international bogus check scheme. Conversely, the international bogus check scheme is not 1B1.3 relevant conduct to the possession and passing of counterfeit currency. They're freestanding offenses despite their interconnectedness. The other issue, Your Honor, going back to 1B1.3A1B, is that not only was Ms. Aldridge not acting in concert with the Nigerian with respect to her offense of counterfeiting, clearly by the district court's finding, her receipt and the Nigerian's transmittal of the counterfeit currency was not something that was reasonably foreseeable to Ms. Aldridge. Strange as it sounds, an unsympathetic picture as she paints, she was a victim at this end of the entire course of events that ultimately brought her before the court. She expected legitimate currency.
So I assume she's spending her time worrying about the proposition that there is no honor among thieves.
That may well be, Your Honor, but, of course, given her lack of honor, she is serving a term of imprisonment. The issue before this court is how long that term of imprisonment should be pursuant to a proper calculation of the advisory sentencing guidelines. The last point I'll make before reserving the remainder of my time for rebuttal is that the government's position, both before the district court and in its briefing, is essentially that the entire chain of events that brings a defendant before the court constitutes the offense. As Your Honor has already pointed out, offense is a specifically defined term by the guidelines. And the last point I make is that when the United States Sentencing Commission wishes to make the historical characteristics of the res of a crime the salient factor in terms of guideline application, they do so. In that regard, I think of Section 2K2.1 of the guidelines, which applies to firearms offenses. There is an enhancement if the firearm had been stolen, not whether the defendant stole it, not whether her offense involved a stolen firearm, but if the firearm had been stolen, regardless of when and who did it and what the defendant knew, there's an increase. Certainly, if the Sentencing Commission intended this outside the United States enhancement to apply to counterfeiting offenses, it could have simply written, as it did with the stolen gun enhancement, that if the counterfeit money originated outside the United States, the defendant gets an enhancement. Here that did not occur, and as this court noted in United States versus Hernandez, the only case out of this circuit dealing with this enhancement, when Congress sort of forwarded onto the Sentencing Commission the need for this additional enhancement, their concern was that money was being created outside of the United States. Here, Ms. Aldridge did not create money outside the United States. It was not part of her offense of conviction. It was not part of her relevant conduct, and it should not have influenced her sentence as it did before Judge Crabb. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Stiller. Mr. Johnson.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Grant Johnson. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Western District of Wisconsin. In response to the court's earlier question to defense counsel, it is the government's position that that the entire pattern of conduct is what the court looked at when she gave the defendant the additional enhancement.
The question is whether that's correct. The guidelines say, the guidelines narrate the conduct, and then they say, quote, that occurred during the commission of the offense of conviction, close quote. And the guidelines are a modified charge offense system, but they start with the charge offense. And in what sense did the international part occur during the commission of the offense of conviction?
If you looked at the offense of conviction narrowly as the offense she pled to, it didn't.
Yeah, well, the offense of conviction is passing counterfeit currency.
Right. But then when you look at the entire pattern of conduct, which
The question I have, though, is how does one look at the entire pattern of conduct given the language of the guideline? I'm well aware that U.S. attorneys routinely want to believe that the guidelines are a conduct-based system rather than a charge-based system. But this is a reminder that the guidelines are a charge offense-based system, not a real offense-based system.
The court's saying, when you look at the definition of 2B5.1, it says any part of the offense committed. And it's the government's position, again, I guess I've already said it, that the term offense includes the pattern of conduct. And when you look at the pattern of conduct in this particular case, I think in response to the court's question to defense counsel about the check scheme could have been part of the pattern of conduct in this case because there's a nexus between the two, that being the payment in money.
But the guidelines don't define offense as the pattern of conduct.
Yeah.
The guidelines define offense as the offense of conviction and relevant conduct. So you've got to either come within the offense of conviction, which this doesn't, or within the definition of relevant conduct, which I think is where the debate is
here. Right, and I think the relevant conduct in this case, and you look at exactly what she did. She was involved in a scheme with a Nigerian. She knew she was going to get paid. The money came in after
the check-writing scheme assumes, looking at the check-writing scheme, just assumes that the guidelines are a real offense system. It doesn't really matter what the government prosecutes. What really matters is the real offense. But the relevant conduct guidelines say otherwise, and in fact, this district judge has been reversed on that very district, on that very point, more than once as a result of real offense arguments from your office more than once.
I understand.
Right. This is not a new thing, and I'm a little disappointed in your brief. It doesn't discuss 1B1.3 in any detail. It doesn't try to grapple with the actual language in the relevant conduct guideline.
I understand, Your Honor. We just viewed it as a little more straightforward than that, I guess. The fact that she had the money.
More straightforward than the actual text of the guideline that controls the outcome. Right. We're above text here in western Wisconsin.
I understand what the court's saying. I don't have anything further unless there's questions.
You're not even going to try to take a stab at fitting this within the relevant conduct definition?
I'm sorry, ma'am. What?
You're not even going to try to fit this into the definition of relevant conduct?
He knows better.
Well, it just seems to me when you look at the facts of the case, it's inherent. If we were going to prove the case, we'd be able to put in the evidence relating to where the money came from. And it just seems to me that the fact that she knows it's counterfeit money, and the purpose of this enhancement is to penalize someone who, if the purpose is to add an additional enhancement, to have put more penalty when the money comes from out of the country. And she knew that money came from out of the country. Hence, the enhancement should apply. The purpose of the enhancement should apply. And it just seems to me, again, to be relevant conduct. She knew it was counterfeit money, and she knew where it came from.
You know, if
she was passing
in the world after Booker, I continue to be surprised by arguments of that sort. Why don't you just say, look, we know it's not relevant conduct. See the language of 1B1.31 hanging paragraph. But you're not bound by the guidelines, and if you think the international entanglement is important, just say so, because the guidelines aren't controlling. But given the Supreme Court's holding that the guidelines must be got right first, right, I don't understand why prosecutors don't routinely, if you might think of it as lowballing the guidelines, and then argue that the district judge should give the appropriate sentence, and then you won't have this problem.
That's clearly the way to do it, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Anything further, Mr. Stiller?
Absent questions from the court, Your Honors, I'll submit the issues and ask the court to vacate the sentence in this case and remand it for further proceedings.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. Our final case of the day.